this next session, we're going to do just a little bit different than we did the first two. We're going to have each individual speaker give their talk, and then maybe like 5 minutes or so of just some questions and answers from the crowd, or some questions and dialogue amongst the crowd. This session is about farming in the city. Someone asked me this morning, how are you going to do that in the city? Well, there's some amazing things, if you're creative, that you can do. And so I'm hoping that this might open our eyes to use some of what we learn in our background, our culture, in a place like an urban setting. So Brother Manny, I'll hand it over to you. Where are you at? There you are. Come on up.
Well, thank you to everyone who shared. I wish I could have been at an event like this 5 years ago. I learned a lot. Very inspiring, very encouraging for myself. So farming in the city, what does that look like? Can you do that? When we first thought about moving into the city, that's one of the things that, one of the dreams that we figured we'd have to drop. We were living on a 7-acre place, kind of like a homestead, and we figured moving into an urban area, farming is gardening, that kind of thing is out of the question. But we have learned since moving to the city that there are actually a lot of opportunities, and we've kind of been exploring some of those ideas. We haven't really implemented anything, I will say, but we can share some opportunities that we see. First of all, I'll show you our own space here. This is a lot of credit to my wife here. We have like a 7,000 square foot property, and in the 2 years that we've lived there, we've done a good bit of work in the backyard to turn it into a place where we grow food, as well as a place for the children to play. Raised beds and plants packed in. And then another thing that this is kind of my thing, is beekeeping. I took that along in, and I started in as a beekeeper like 15 years ago, and it's actually been very successful in the city. There's no like row crops close by, so there's not the pesticide and the chemical pressure, and they've actually done exceptionally well, I will say. So that was kind of a pleasant, fun surprise. And I've actually connected with a number of other beekeepers in the city as well, so I'm not nearly the only one doing it. And I could see that as becoming a viable source of income, and I've thought about that myself, but nothing serious at this point. This is a hive that I have on our garage roof there. that's our space there. We've done the last couple of years. And so looking forward, we've kind of been wondering, how can we make a difference in the community? What are some ways that we can bless the people with the skills that we've learned, taken for granted? I grew up on a farm, like a 70-acre farm, and learn about growing plants. And so someone talked about shared spaces. I think multiple people have mentioned that, and that's one thing we've really noticed too. Shared spaces is a big thing in the city. Like, we have, even though we have a really small property, our children have more space than ever to play now because of the parks. We have to go with them across the street to the park, but there's lots of room there, way bigger than our other property was. And then, gardening is a similar thing. There's all these community gardens that you find throughout the city, and they're usually shared. Neighbors, people come together and work together. and then share the results. And so we've kind of been inspired by that. I'll just give you a quick little tour of some of the gardens that we've seen. This is a map, just kind of showing you kind of roughly where these areas are in Baltimore. this is, if we don't do it, I guess God will, you know. It's a house where the roof caved in and there's like a tree growing out of the house. That thing is literally growing inside the house. And we have a good bit of those in Baltimore. I'm sure there's in other cities as well. So it was just a fun picture. I don't know how long this takes. It's too long. I think we shouldn't wait on that. We should, you know, be do something about it. Space here, this actually was, it'd be fun to have a photo of when this was actually row houses. And you can see the sidewalk there. So this big open field used to be houses. Now it's just like this field. That would be a great opportunity for someone to use the space to grow food. This, we just drove past this space. We don't know a whole lot about it, but very fascinating effort there in that neighborhood of vegetables being grown right across the street from the, you can kind of see the row houses there in the one corner. And this too, if you go on Google Maps, I actually went on Google Maps and could hardly find the place because there's still buildings there. They just tore them down recently. Another community garden that we saw. And then this place here is a very unique farm that we found on Google Maps that we visited the other week, actually. I don't know. I was going to give you some. Do you want to share about this place here?
So this place is close to the Baltimore Zoo in Druid Hill, close to Druid Hill Park. It was started by, I think, a Jamaican man who very much had a heart for the community. Farmer Chippy is his name, and he had a real passion to involve the locals in community gardening. It's an incredible place. We were quite impressed. Lots of raised beds. They have aquaponics going there, two sizable greenhouses. And the lady I was talking with there, one of the farmers there, was saying that she believes they have the solution to crime in the city. She believes, I was telling her, I think there should be hundreds of these in the city here, and she said that they believe they have a solution for crime. The neighborhood, they're very involved in the neighborhood. The neighborhood teenagers come and hang out there, volunteer there. And just the vibe of the place was so different from a street corner where teenagers normally hang out. There was, I don't know, maybe a dozen teenagers sitting around chatting. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was orderly. It was amazing. We were just like, wow, this is opportunity for, and this is not necessarily a Christian place. Some of the language and stuff there was obviously not Christian, and I think there could be lots of opportunities for Kingdom Christians to carry a vision like this forward. So something that burns on our heart. There's definitely lots of open, vacant lots in these neighborhoods that could be used for that. And we're just praying for God's wisdom to know how to press into that. They were very willing to offer any advice and connections and stuff that they had made. They said the city is not very supportive, kind of, but not as much as they could be according to the work that they're doing. So they're kind of, I guess, winging it a little bit. And I just think it'd be an opportunity for the church.
Yeah, I found that was just amazing to, you know, just hearing about their vision and what they've seen already. We drove in there and we're like, you see these people just hanging out the kind of people you see on the kind of the scary, you know, intersection in the city, but it's in this garden space. And it just seems so peaceful and relaxed. And yeah, I just, you know, imagine just seeing more of that. Here's another place that we've toured. And this place here is a vacant lot that we've, so in Baltimore, there's this program called Adopt a Lot. You can sign up to have access to the lot and kind of do with it whatever you want. You can't do any, like you can't raise vegetables and sell them, but you can, you know, you can, yeah, you can grow grass in it or have a garden in there or whatever. And so we're working on getting that space and want to grow food there. It's a neighborhood that's about 2 miles from our place. We spent last couple months, have been going there one evening per week. Is there anything you want to share about that?
Well, just that this neighborhood specifically is, I guess what you'd call a blighted neighborhood, very, very many abandoned houses, and it seems like a bit of a forgotten corner. Not a lot of activity, but definitely some drug activity and just lots of needs. And feels like hopelessness, I guess. There was a big elementary school that got torn down about 10 years ago there. That lot is still sitting open, probably a 2 acre total area, green space that something could be done with maybe. It just feels like gardening could be a very, very good avenue for kingdom building relationships to happen. Jesus talked a lot in his parables about gardening and things of the land, and it just feels like a garden is a place where people come together, and we would really have a heart to connect with the locals there and just maybe initiate something and make sure that the locals could take the movement on themselves. We would really like to just partner with people and provide maybe teaching and work with the locals in providing something that's beautiful and sustainable for their community.
Yeah, so that's all that we have. So any questions? I'll hand the mic over to Stephen or whoever. Yes, Wendell.
With your beekeeping.
Yeah.
Is there any danger of your bees staying in all the neighborhoods, all the neighbors, anything like that?
Yeah, well, I have my bees on the rooftop for that reason. There's not really any chance of them bothering the neighbors. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm exploring, you know, places where I could put them, like in more like an open space, get permission to just have some beehives on the edge of a big open space. I know there'd be a lot of spaces like that, so I'm going to pursue that, try to grow that. So. Yes, Michael.
Did I hear you say that you can grow vegetables, but you couldn't actually raise them, like for selling them at a produce auction?
Yeah, I think if you rent the lot for so much per year, you are allowed to sell vegetables. But yeah, that's a little bit of a hurdle. The other thing with the adopt a lot thing in Baltimore, at least, is whenever the city decides they need a lot for something else, they can just, you know, reclaim it, and then you're kind of all the work you put in is just kind of gone. So ideally, you would. Like long-term rented or even owned a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Or is beauty or aesthetics on a community garden like that?
You mean like to the neighborhood? I think it's pretty important. Yeah. Yeah. To the locals and to the city. I mean, yeah, if the locals aren't happy, then the city's not going to like it either. So yeah, it's going to have to be nice. And if someone cares about it, I think it's going to be nice.
And if it's a vacant, overgrown lot, yeah, a vegetable garden is soon much nicer than just weeds, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stephen?
How many lots would be available in the city?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that statistic. Yeah, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of opportunity. We could all go and there'd be space for everyone.
But a lot of the lots are there where there were houses, row houses torn down, so you gotta put some hard work into getting either raised beds or getting the stones and bricks out.
I don't know. That'd be an interesting thing to look into, that I don't know.
We are quite amazed how much food we can grow in our little backyard. So I could almost say yes if people utilize their space.
Yeah, we had goats too. We don't anymore. Animals are a little bit of an issue in a small space. Because of, well, one for us it was rats. We soon had rats move in with the goats. Yeah, no one complained, but yeah, we do have chickens still.
Did you still have the tunnel you built to give the chickens access to the garden? Mm-hmm. You didn't show that in your picture.
And no, I didn't. Well, you might be able to see it in the one picture. Yeah, well, back there along the fence. Yeah. Yes.
Do you have a picture of your workshop in the basement?
No, I don't. If you want to see our woodworking shop, you have to come on the tour to Baltimore tomorrow. And we'll actually give you something if you come. So sign up for the Baltimore tour.
So the next session is what was somehow appointed to me that I will attempt to share a little bit. I don't live in the city, I live in the country, but I have a dream. I actually had a dream. Maybe I'll start with that a little bit. So about a year and a half ago, about the middle of the night, 2 o'clock-ish, I had this dream, and actually Manny was up on this high tower with a couple of his boys. It was like a communication tower of some sort, and that was it, but I woke up. And instantly when I woke up, another brother, Brother Daniel, came to my mind and just impacted, like just a thought that came to me, I was awake. And this train of thought entered my mind that he needs to buy a house in Baltimore. He needs to flip it because he likes flipping houses. And then he needs to prepare it for families to move into and get acclimated to the city, stay there for a year, and then move to another part of the city or to another city. It would be an avenue. And so I had this dream, I had the dream, then I woke up and I had this thought. And I was all excited. I couldn't wait to tell Daniel. But the next impression I got was, so are you going to go then? I mean, you're saying this is such a good idea. Well, why don't you go? And how can I tell anybody else to go if I'm not willing to go? So that sent me on a journey. I said yes. I didn't sleep the rest of the morning, but I said yes, and it was a journey of pursuing what God wants me to do with this urban setting. And that's part of the reason why I'm involved here. And that's kind of where we come to this point. I am on the farm. I grew up on a farm, and I'm still on the farm. I'm still involved with the farm, and I like it. But I'm going to share some things here. So why urban farming? I'm going to attempt to answer that question a little bit, maybe not exactly answer it, but at least share the vision. I'm going to give a little snapshot of the current health status of U.S. I'm going to share what we are about Harmony Acres, the farm that we're part of, where I'm at, and then the disconnection that I see, and maybe a little bit of a vision to do something about it. So let's start off with the current health status of the U.S. Here is a text that I got off of the CDC website. I literally copied and pasted on here, and this is what it says. Chronic diseases such as heart disease, cancer, and diabetes are the leading causes of death and disability in the United States. They're also the leading drivers of the nation's $5.3 trillion in annual healthcare costs. Three in four American adults have at least one chronic condition, and over half have two or more chronic conditions. Among adults 65 and older, more than 90% have at least one chronic condition and so forth. The bottom is kind of what struck me. Many preventable chronic diseases are caused by a short list of risk behaviors: smoking, poor nutrition, physical inactivity, and excess alcohol. Heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Let's dig into this a little bit more. They are the leading causes of death and disability in the United States. Heart disease, physical inactivity, smoking, and poor nutrition is what I find when I do some research on what causes heart disease. This is separate from this document. I just do some research and try to look into it, and by CDC, this is what they tell me. I think we probably know this stuff maybe already. Cancer, tobacco use, overweight, obesity, alcohol consumption. Diabetes, being overweight or obese, not enough physical activity, and unhealthy eating. So out of every four men in this room, according to statistics, maybe not in this room, but one of us are well, three are sick in America with chronic conditions. Wait, am I off track here? Here we go. And many preventable chronic diseases are caused by a short list of risk behaviors. You see here, smoking, poor nutrition, physical inactivity, and excess health. I don't know if anyone can grasp that number. That's a pretty big number. 80% of Americans that are sick, or not sick, because that's the number they use, but 80% of them probably, maybe the city is sicker, I'm not sure, but 80% of them live in cities. 80% of American people live in the cities, and the 20% are outside of the country. And in the cities, we see many places like this. In the corners, we have Clark's Grocery. They sell beer, wine, deli, and sandwiches. They even sell beer on Sundays. I have a special sign for that. They have a Coca-Cola sign. This place is probably familiar to Daniel and Manny. It's right up the road from them. It's Hartford Convenience Store. It's a place where they sell lottery tickets and junk food. And people are in there not very active. All right, that's kind of a snapshot at the current health situation in the United States. Here, I'm going to go into our farm. Our farm is made up of two different parts. One is the operations part of our farm, where we have the beef, chicken, and other things, bakery. The other part is a separate part where we use to interact with people to get our food out. So here's a picture of our farm. Cattle out in the pasture, green grass. We got chickens out there. Another picture from our cattle, just thriving in the grass. Our chickens, we move every day. This is a little outdated pictures, but that's what we're doing. We do have a farm store that's in Madison, Virginia, out in the country, as you can see here. It's out in the country, out in the hills, down in Virginia. There's a day that we had an event at our farm store. But it's out in the, like I said, it's out in the country, it's not in the city. And this might look pretty good, but it's really not doing that well at this point. There's some changes we need to make, and I'm not sure we're even gonna continue, but that's what we're doing. It was a great asset for us to get some experience in the farm store, interacting with people at the least. We have a bakery, we bake sourdough bread, einkorn whoopie pies, gluten-free products, and so forth. So our ministry, the Harmony Acres Ministry, it's a nonprofit organization, and it's set up as a private membership association partially due to the food, the nature of the food that we're offering. We do partner with a lot of other farmers, and we get not just our farm, but other farmers as well. Our mission statement is something that has kind of been in development and shifting over the last years, but we're passionate about going making disciples. We're passionate about nourishing communities and food grown in integrity, and we love to equip farmers and steward and serve and prosper. In the past 5 years, we've interacted with about 6,701 people. That was if we would, we send them an order, they place an order, and we send them an order on a website, that might be the only interaction. But we've had an exchange of something. We shipped about 1,140,604 pounds of real food last year or per year. And every week we ship about 800 to 900 orders per week, roughly. This is our website. Everything from the ministry gets ordered online. They have to become a member. They place an order, and we pack the order, and we ship it out. Or they can come to the farm to pick it up, but very little people do. We're right in the heart of Lancaster County, where there's a lot of other resources. We ship out all across the United States. As you'll notice on this map, that most of the people are clumped together in the cities. So a lot of our food does go to the cities, most of it actually, at least urban settings or suburban settings, maybe not the heart of urban. A large portion of our people are up in that area, and that's because we have about 50 to 60 drop-off locations that we deliver food to every week. We have 5 runs that we take down there with our Sprinter van. We put food into containers like this, drop it off, and leave. And it works great. It's a great business model if that's what we're trying to do. But the problem is we're not really doing anything about that. We're feeding people, but we're feeding probably most of the wealthy people. And I'm okay with feeding anybody good food. That's what I like to do. And that's what we're passionate about. But there's a disconnection here. Our farm is completely disconnected from this farm store. So what do we do about that? What I'm going to share here, the next portions here, is pretty theoretical. And it's a vision, and it's not something we've done. And I like the latest technology for a couple reasons. And one of those is that I can get a picture of what I envision into other people's minds, because I can make it look like something. But what if this place would look more like that? What about this place? We make it look more like that. Like I said, this is not done. This is not real. But I think I have the question, do our people possess what it takes to make something like this happen? What's missing that it can't happen? Sometimes we wonder the cost factor. Can we, sometimes it's like, is it just too expensive to have this good food? If you do some calculations and you take the population of the United States and you calculate it and divide it into the annual health care costs, $15,186 goes to health care costs per person in the United States. That probably including all the children. That's a pretty large number, and even if just a portion of that would go to farms, we'd probably start getting a little healthier. And I'm not just here about making people healthier. I do believe God wants us to be healthy. I don't think God wants us to be sick. Jesus was healing sick people, but I don't either think he wants us just ignore. You know, I really think we should pay attention to this. So I believe, I envision just these kinds of places empowered, I should say, by local people. We could go maybe and into the city and have the local people empower us. I mean, partner up with them. That would probably take a lot of time, and I didn't live in the city, so I don't know how that looks. You guys are probably thinking, oh, regulations, and I'm not interested. I don't know what you guys are thinking. I'd love to have your feedback. But I just also envision a place where people would be teaching the young generation about canning, cooking. It could maybe be in combination with Brian Martin's cafe and a little farm store on the side. This is a vision. This is not real. What's it going to take to make something like that real? Would that make a difference in our nation if we'd have lots of these throughout the cities? I'm going to stop with that, and I would love to have some dialogue.
So what are you waiting on?
I don't know. Maybe you. Yes.
So there's a beautiful vision here. The corner grocery store, I don't know about the other one, appears to be in a section of town where they probably don't have the finances to buy the food that you guys sell.
Right.
I'm sure you've thought about that. What's your solution?
I thought about putting it in a corner where in Baltimore there is many different towns. And you can drive one through one city, or I'm sorry, one town, and turn into the street, and there's this wealthy neighborhood. So what if we would pick the corner that would be strategic, that it could, the wealthy people have access, they don't have to go way into the slum area, but the poor people are right there, they can support it, and then maybe we could accept EBT maybe, and get people like that, but then we would probably reach out and try like, hey, you interested in learning food. I envision as much as possible the food to come locally and then maybe supplemented by places like Harmony Acres. And then there could be many people who maybe don't want to go to the city or whoever we could find as local as possible. We would bring the food as local as possible. Does that answer your question? Not really?
It does. I think that richer demographic would be important to make your model work.
Right.
The poorer people, unfortunately, don't either have the money to spend on high-quality food or they want to spend their money on other stuff.
Like right.
To be retrained.
They'll probably need to be trained, right? They'll need to be educated. I heard a hand up back there.
Yeah, well, this is probably a bad argument, but my guess is that Twinkies are more expensive than Whoopie Pies? Or
Twinkies?
Are more expensive than Whoopie Pies? I think
probably not.
I think maybe one of the challenges they may not have ate that, and it might just take you giving them some samples and realize what they're missing out on.
Good point. The other thing is, a lot of these people, from what I understand, they might not get out of their neighborhood all their life, and so they're literally, unless they are taken out of their neighborhood, that's the only thing they have access to. Maybe they would think differently when they would see it and have access. I'm asking the question.
I think there's a bridge. I think the bridge is prepared food. So I have a relative that makes casserole, and they sell it like crazy.
Interesting. That's a good thought.
The problem is they may not know what to do with that food.
Right. Yes.
People might be able to afford it better than we can think. There's now already pilot programs where some of the healthcare companies or insurance companies find it's cheaper to give their people $500 a month to spend on real food than it is to pay their medication if they need it to don't get the real food.
Maybe you should repeat that.
There's pilot programs in place across our country already where some of the healthcare providers or insurance companies find it cheaper to provide their people $500 a month to buy real food. It's cheaper to do that than to pay their medications. There's several programs already running in the U.S., and they're just starting, so it might be closer than we think.
Anyone else? Yes.
That picture looks very, very nice.
Right.
Very fixed up.
Mm-hmm.
It appeals to the modern. Well, we would, as I said, perhaps we'd probably make a store look like.
Right.
Someone would even walk through the front door if it looked not as modern as that. Plus, we already talked about the cost.
Right. What do you think?
Well, the flower pots will probably get destroyed.
Sure.
There's actually a need to start kind of a new trend other than just the downtown. We need an example for people to kind of go for something nice, fixed up, maintained. It doesn't have to be necessarily fancy, but rather just well maintained. Yeah, maybe.
Go ahead, do.
One thing about that, I was recently talking with some of the neighborhood associations. A couple years ago, they had installed, they'd spent like thousands of dollars, $50,000 along to put big concrete pots along the street and fill them with perennials.
Oh, wow.
To make it nice. Yeah. About 5 years ago, our neighborhood had put big concrete pots along the main street and filled them with perennials in an effort to make it prettier. And I think just half a year ago, they ended up spending another couple thousand to wreck them, taking them away.
Oh, wow.
People were using them as a trash can and as a toilet. I think the lesson in that is the people need to be invested themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Once you invest in it and kind of own it, you won't destroy it.
Right. All right, I think it's time I turn the time over to our special guests for today, and that is Loretta and Marcia. Did I say that right? She is from Coatesville, and Loretta is working with her down in Coatesville to do some community gardens there. And also, she is looking to transform her old schoolhouse that she grew up in, that she didn't grow up in, she went to school in, and it got, I guess they were going to tear it down or something, and then you guys are managing to salvage it, and you're hoping to make a community center out of it. So if you can just come up, however you want to do that, and then I'll hand it over to you. Do you?
I'm very happy to be here. Yes, so this is Marcia London. We're doing a community garden at her place, at her property. And we have our friend Jason. What's her last name? Zader. It's also very, God is bringing her in to help with the community center vision. She's a grant writer and a lot of business skills. So anyone that, I'm gonna talk for a little bit of the time and then I'm gonna give it to Marcia because she's a wonderful speaker. She was a teacher in that school, right? No, not that one, okay. But like 40 years or something?
In Coatesville.
And she's a wonderful speaker. So I wanted to give her a little bit of the time. She's always wanted to, yeah, she's just, it's such a blessing that God was bringing us together. And anyone that knows me, I lived with Manny and Lydia in Baltimore for 6-7 months, I guess it was. And that's where Daniels are also there, same group. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm passionate about gardening. And while I was in Baltimore, that dream of gardening was just very incubated by all the spaces, and me and Lydia would constantly be talking about this, and that was just a dream that was burning in my heart how to bring this into the urban setting. It was a vision I had and how to bring it to pass. So I'm going to tell the dream. So for many years, I've had a dream that I could empower urban communities by teaching them skills of self-sustainability, especially in teaching gardening that had been passed down to me from my Amish ancestry. This year, I've said I'm living my dream. I've started 2 community gardens, one in Morgantown and one in Coatesville at Marsha's house, where I teach people how to garden by doing it. We have taken grass sod and turned it into garden beds. We have planted seeds and plants that are now growing beautifully, except for the ones that the groundhog is eating. I've also been involved at the Bridge Community Center in Coatesville and started a tomato growing club with a group of ladies from there. I feel very happy at seeing my dream becoming reality this year. And yet now, as this dream becomes reality, I realize I have a bigger dream. It's a dream that my people group, you all, would as a community begin to empower urban communities with the knowledge of self-sustainability. Through starting the community garden at Marsha's, I've been introduced to the Haytai community. Marsha and other leaders from there have a vision to empower their community by teaching skills at a community center in their neighborhood. They have acquired a historic building from the township for this purpose. But the building sits empty. Marsha and her group need money and people who are able to renovate the building. And I dream for our community to help with this project. I know we have contractors who know how to do all the work that needs to be done on this building. And we know how to do frolics. The work that needs to be done is nothing hard for us to do if we have a mind to do it. And beyond this, my dream includes that people from our community would help to staff the community center. There's skills that we could teach, but not that we would just staff it, but that we would also be learning from it. And there's so much that Marsha and her group and the Haytai community could share with us. Things like learn GED classes, there could be homeschool the children with the Haytai community children, learning things, doing plays or dramas together, things that we could dream about together to reach the community with the love of God. Historically, our people have kept themselves separate a lot of times and not worked together in this way. We've been afraid of other groups and influences, and I believe this has left others feeling devalued and rejected by us, and it has left us with an emptiness and unfulfilled joy. My dream is that at the Haytai Community Center, this would be different. And our 2 distinct communities and cultures would come together in humility to work together, each realizing God has gifted each of us with unique gifts that each of us need to receive from each other, so that together we will both be a better community than we would have been apart. And that's my little speech. Now I'll give it over to Marsha.
Thank you. I want to first commend you. Of all the groups I've talked to, you're the first that are really working your fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 to 23, if you're familiar with the fruit of the Spirit. And to give you some background, I grew up in Coatesville. I hope you've heard of Coatesville. It's just 35 minutes from here. And if you know the Coatesville, to whom much is given, much is supposed. And what is the other one? Everybody has a purpose and a plan. So I had to examine my life to see what's my purpose and what God plans for me. The history of Coatesville. I am here because my grandfather in 1909 left Hume, Virginia, and my other grandparents on my mother's side left Whitehall, Maryland to come to Coatesville because the Lucan Steel Mill advertised all throughout the southern states, come African Americans to Coatesville and work in the steel mine, steel mill. And at least they get the least amount of money, the hardest jobs. And so they came. And then my father and mother became neighbors in the Hayti area. Hayti gets its name because when Haiti did that uprising, then any place in the United States where a group of blacks lived, they called it Hayti. So you were only allowed to live in certain parts of Coatesville, nowhere in the center of Coatesville. You had to live on the outskirts. So as a black community, we gathered there. If you know that, you can Google this to prove what I'm saying. In 1911, so my grandfather came in 1909, but in 1911, because of the steel mill, we became a strong drinking town. And I went in there just for an hour once on a tour. And after that hour, I said, if I were a drinker, I need a drink. Because at any moment, you could lose your life. And I know of people that lost limbs, and the steel would explode and splash and burn people to death. Heavy equipment crushed people to death. But nobody spoke about that. They would just go home angry, afraid, and they were all men at the time. So I guess they had to go back the next day to support their families. So we became an angry kind of town. And so in 1911, a gentleman by the name of Zachariah Walker was walking at, I guess it was midnight, drunk with a gun in his pocket, and he starts shooting in the air. And a well-respected white constable who worked at another steel mill, who was a guard there, went out to see what was going on, and he had a gun, and they start shooting at each other, and Zachariah, the black man, killed the white man. This is 1911, without cell phones, telephones, TV. Chester County poured out into Coatesville to find him. And they found him, and he got wounded. He was trying to kill himself, but he got wounded, and they took him to the old Coatesville Hospital and handcuffed him to the bedpost. That next day was a Sunday. All the churches let out early just to go and see what's going on. They got to the hospital, a mob broke in and dragged him and the bedpost to the hillside, the next farm, and they made a bonfire and they threw him in the fire. They put pitchforks to keep him in, and three times he cried, "Don't give me no crooked death." So if you want to Google that, there's a book by a professor at Millersville College who wrote the book, No Crooked Death. Talks about all that day. Okay, so after, and they took pictures with the mob standing around his remains. And those pictures got into the newspapers across the United States, and they said, Coatesville, the country's tragedy, not just America's tragedy, not just the little Coatesville thing. And they took Coatesville off the map for a while, and this train wouldn't stop there for a while, because Coatesville is the only city in Chester County. Westchester's a borough in Downingtown, but Coatesville was supposed to be the place. When I was young growing up, everybody came to Coatesville to shop. All the major stores were right in Coatesville. But in 1968, when the mill started to fall, Chester County allowed for Coatesville to become the poverty pocket. And they allowed the drugs to people come to Coatesville. So all of my old students, the only jobs that they offered them was to sell these drugs and then get locked up and go into the system. And while I was teaching, they built another jail for juveniles. So a lot of my students would go to the juvenile jail, and then their fathers would be in the adult jail. So that's what really happened to Coatesville. So I examined my grandfather to say, why didn't he tell us this happened? And because I didn't find out until I was teaching, married. I was thinking it was going on 28 years old before I saw on TV, Channel 12, where I did a play about Coatesville. So if you know anything about slavery, and I'm just three generations from slavery, from my great-grandmother, Rebecca Lukens, during the Civil War time. So families keep that pain, that anger, that frustration, that hatred, that rejection, and they pass it on, but they don't talk about it. So then while teaching in Coatesville, I experienced many of my students, they shot each other, going to jail, and they were fathers. They had children who have children. So we're talking about a place full of pain. And to really educate me, my father was a workaholic. So he became a supervisor at the mill. Then we have a farm, 10-acre farm. Back in the day, we had a milking cow and a bull and four sheep. We had an apple orchard that fed the whole neighborhood, morning, noon, and night. They say we were their McDonald's in the 50s. Okay, then the old cemetery, because blacks couldn't be buried with whites back in the day, so he purchased more land around his farm, so we have a cemetery. So I'm in the grief business. I bury people. And now I have to the fourth generation. So God had to show me some things. What is going on? And this is what he showed me. We know that the sins of the fathers will be passed on to the third and fourth generation. And I've seen four generations of people now. And when you read the Bible, any group that disrespects God, things happen. So God gave me the fruit of the Spirit to work. And then he just showed me these verses. And this is what I see to the third and fourth generation going around and around and around, stuck. How do we get out of it? Work the fruit. This is your medication that we need. This, after working this, your food will digest properly. Cancer can be cured, for real, but because we're stuck down here, we can't see it. Okay, so I'm real fast. Forgiveness, we have to forgive the past. Your worst enemy, you gotta let it go and trust God to fight your battle. Then repentance, that's a new way of thinking. The old way of thinking, let it go, because this just leaves anger and pain. Step out on faith. Love, it's in red for the blood of Jesus. Love and respect. Those are your weapons to use in a fight, and that's your healing. The joy, being positive no matter what. The peace, because I know that I've been fighting with anger. Because I married some men of Coatesville, and I couldn't understand what is going on. The poor guys didn't have a chance and depressed. And the one got into the drugs until finally it killed him. And the other, he came back from the Vietnam Wars and never healed. So I had to learn, how do I handle this? I did this morning, noon, and night, no matter what. Then after that, peace, stay calm. That means God got my back. I trust him no matter what. Patience, I've learned to listen with my heart. when someone comes at me crazy, because pain makes you crazy. I'm into, oh, I lost my daughter 3 years ago, my most obedient child. And she had a wonderful life. But one day she got up, she had pains in her legs, and she had a blood clot and died within the hour. She was 42 years old. She left two children. Her husband's so angry, he's not even talking to us. But after that, that's when I really got into mind, soul, and body healing. They all go together. What the mind thinks is going on, it filters to the soul, then throughout the body. So if the mind is working your fruit, full of the Holy Spirit, your soul is joyful, your body can heal. But if your mind has all this going on, and that's Coatesfield, their minds, you're dealing with the minds. Then after the do kindnesses, even if nobody thanks you, God saw it. Then you're doing this for him. Goodness, be obedient to all rules and laws. Faithfulness, gosh, everybody has children in Coatesville, but nobody's married because nobody trusts anybody. Now, where did that come from? When there was slavery, and we're still slave-minded, the plantation taught us, don't trust each other, don't trust anybody. Don't be faithful, and that's what we have. So when a man cheats on a woman, he's also on the women. He's cheating on God, and it filters down. When people divorce, you tear your children in half because they loved you both. So you ruined your kids before they had a chance. Gentleness, I've learned to be non-judging. So God was really on me. If I said anything about somebody else, next thing you know, it's me or my kids. So I've learned to shut this mouth. Then you're disciplined for God, and you've worked your fruit, and he can depend on you. You will reach your promised land. These are the promises God has promised us in the Bible. And he let me know this year, after 22 years of this, that I finally got there because of this building. The building was, I was there for third grade, and then in the middle of third grade, integration came, and I was allowed to go to the rainbow school, to the white school. And then after that, soon after that, they closed the school, and it became the Valley Township Municipal Building. And they were there almost 50 years. And they just built a new Valley Township building, and they wanted to tear our building down. And we have had to fight them for 7 years. They thought we were going to go away. They gave us all kind of obstacles. And they this new, because the money has been cut off for blacks. In my neighborhood, Amish people are buying houses now. Whites are moving in, because we used to be all black. And Hispanics. For the blacks that built the houses, they can no their children can no longer afford them. They want us to leave. So, this was the first grade class. Miss Van was even my teacher back in the day. That's what the room looked like back in the 50s. If you go down Route 30, you will drive right past the past school. This is a picture of a signing. They gave us a performance contract. Pay the insurance, pay the architect, pay the engineer, cut the grass. Whatever they asked, we did. We even, the architect has the blueprints for us, cost $12,000. And this is a book, 700 pages. My sister wrote it, it's on Amazon, about our area for the first 100 years of all our grandparents and all the entrepreneurs we had back in the day. The next generation, they need to stay high, meaning the pain in their heads is just too much. So they either drink or they smoking some, they call it weed now, that smells like a skunk. That's how you can tell them when they come to you. But they need to do that. But that high only lasts for 2 hours or so, and they got to smoke again. which also gives them that lazy, lay-back spirit. Because I have boys, but they know how to play the games and relax. So running my cemetery, it's me and my older cousin that will be 80, and my other workers that are in their 70s. But God, about money. In 2018, all the money my father had squirreled away was gone. And so I had a cousin who heard about a women's conference in Texas. And I never flew before, but I had a new credit card, and we went to Texas. And I came back with three things. First, every penny you own is God's. He's only using it to see what you're going to do with it. Now, in Coatesville, what we do with God's money, gamble with it, lie with it, cheat with it, steal with it, and even kill for it. So how can God bless that? So you have to talk to the mind. That's what you're up against. Okay. No.
I think that's about it.
Right? Was that it? Oh, that's it. Okay. So every penny is God's, and he promised you your daily bread. So for this day, my taxes are paid up. I had lunch I'm grateful for. So be grateful for each day. And lastly, your money is only as good as your faith. So I came back happy, 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 because my faith is over the top. So when Coatesville, and we're the only blacks owning a building, except for some churches, plenty of churches, but the churches can't even get together because of that mindset that they have. The churches don't even want to hear my fruit. I said, oh, yeah, here she comes, fruit of spirit. Nobody has time for it. So, but I know God's going to do a new thing for that next generation and this building. So I thank you for your time.
Would you be open to any questions? Anybody have questions? Go ahead.
So you mentioned when you were young, there was an apple orchard that fed the whole town.
Haytai area. Haytai. Only my area. Yes. Yes.
Say that again?
My community. Yes.
Yeah. So how many families was there?
Started out in the early days, there were 17 homeowners back then, and then they had big families back then. You know, people had 8 kids. And so before school, they were in my father's orchard. Now, my father was a businessman, so he wanted to sell the apples to the egg auction. So he chased the people out every day, but morning, noon, and night, they told us that we fed them, and we didn't know they were hungry at the time. And he liked to make apple cider. So I have 11 new apple trees. You see about 11?
Okay.
They're coming. I'm trying to start it again. And gardening.
We're doing the garden in the orchard.
Yes. But the groundhogs, if you have anything about groundhogs, help us.
Yes. Anybody want to come shoot one for the glory of God?
They're going to get there. Yes, but first she's working with the seniors. Her group is like 60 and 70 years old. So it starts with us, and once we get into the building, it's just sad right now. Yeah.
I think once they see activity and they see programs going, then they will come in.
We will give them hope.
Yeah.
We've gotten an award last week from the NAACP because, again, we're the first group to even venture out, but it's all God. It's no way we're going to. Valley Township really didn't want us to sign. Even at signing, they were angry. Yes. Other townships helped their historical buildings. No. It was awful.